We often like to hear stories around people who have lost their sight or are losing their sight, and why it's their conscious decision not to let sight loss rule their lives. With technology and services improving all the time, that playing field is being levelled. Talking with me today is Maxine Turkington. Maxine, thank you for speaking with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, Maxine.
Well, I was born in London in... Well, my age is all over the place. It always comes right after my name, but it's sort of a joke. Yeah, and I was fully sighted until I was in my 40s. I had 20/20 vision and always had annual eye checks. But I noticed a change in this and some flushing and whatever. And I was living in America at the time. I'm a Londoner through and through, although now I live in Cambridge. But I was in America when this happened, and they have some very good hospitals and eye clinics. And they discovered that I have Stargardt's, which is quite rare. It usually starts in childhood, where the central vision starts to go. But mine was nice enough to wait till I was in my 40s, and indeed I gradually lost my central vision, so I've had no central vision for many years. Now, I sort of just worked around this for many years. I had to give up driving a few years after I was diagnosed, but I actually started a business and designed it around my problem, and it was a one-person business that my husband retired from the company he worked for, and so he did all the book work and things that required sight. And it was a nanny and housekeeping agency, so I designed all the applications and everything, so they had to write in large print with a very dark pen. So I sort of found the solution for that. Now, as the years went by, I really missed living in England, and every year when we came here, we both was sad to go back because my husband was born in Belfast, so he was a Brit. And in 2002, we made the big decision rather quickly, came to Cambridge for a week. My daughter had moved there, and we fell in love with it, so we wanted to move there. And in 24 hours, we found a flat that was dilapidated, but we were used to sort of taking things apart, putting them back together. They took photographs and we redesigned it from 4,000 miles away and moved in December 2002. Well, my dilemma was that as a high energy person and somebody who likes to keep their brain active, what was I going to do now? So my first thought was to join CAMSight, the local charity, and my first job there was to take a blind lady for a walk every week, and I still do all these years later. And then, because I've never had any trouble talking, it's always a chatterbox, I don't know how I got started as a motivational speaker, which I did to groups of people. And then, this is very important, my motto, which is, when your life changes, change your life. Forget about what you can't do and do what you can do, and you'll be surprised to find out that you can do almost anything. And this is really important because I use this in my talks, and it seems to have inspired a lot of people to follow that route. So with this in mind, you know, I started to give these talks, and then I joined RNIB, and I also did a lot of talks for them. But in the meantime, I needed more. And I thought, what is not available at this point for visually impaired people? Do they have a cookbook that they can use? And so I researched this. There was no cookbook designed for them. So, of course, what I did was put together a lot of recipes that I've collected over the years, put them through a scanner attached to my computer, and weeded out 100 of them that I thought I could adapt so that visually impaired people could use the recipes and would be able to cook them on their own with a little help. And I changed some of the ingredients so they were very healthy, some of the methods and so on. I got a grant to publish it in large print. A lot of people wanting either CDs or DAISY versions, and eventually RNIB took over the book, and it's now available in their shop. And I forget about it. It was so long ago, but a lot of people know me, yeah, because of the cookbook. And when I have to meet somebody from RNIB at King's Cross Station, where I go to monthly meetings there, because of a customer council that I belong to now, a lot of other things, if they haven't met me before, they look at the book. And it's true, I was brunette when the picture was taken in the front page. My husband, now I'm blonde. I'll never go grey. And so then that done, and the talks, and my husband usually accompanied me because I was going to places like Edinburgh and Wales, you're all over the place, talking about the book, and then people would buy it. And my husband and I were very close. We did everything together. But unfortunately, he died 4 years ago. So some of this changed. In the meantime, I was doing some other things with RNIB. But when he died, I needed more. So I became a campaigner and then a key campaigner. And I don't follow rules, so I do my own thing. And they didn't... they let me because I was always successful in getting what I wanted. I never follow rules. I don't believe in them. If I can do better, I'll do my own thing. It's sort of a joke. But anyway, I still continue to do that. But I've been involved in a big fundraiser that I started, and we made, it was between RNIB and Campsite. We split it, and each charity made £750. So I found I was getting quite good at these things. So now, oh gosh, I can't even tell you how many things I'm involved in. I love being on the panel, the customer council. And what we do is discuss all the different facets of the news or joining up of RNIB in Action for Blind People and give our ideas and our criticisms, if applicable, to what they, you know, present to us. And I've met some lovely people there. But the one thing I missed was my travel. And I belong to University of the Third Age in Cambridge. And at the time I thought about it, one was allowed to put in a little blip in their newsletter that wasn't connected directly with U3A. I thought, I know what, there must be a lot of people, sighted or not, who don't travel for one reason or another. So I put a little... about two lines in there saying that I wanted to start a singles travel group. Please email me if you're interested. Well, I went to London to see a play that day. So anyway, I had 48 responses that same night. And anyway, the upshot is it's now, what, almost 3 years later or 2.5 years later. And we've been on several trips, some abroad. And everybody else is sighted, by the way. In fact, I don't even have any friends who are visually impaired because it doesn't cross my mind that I can't do what they can do.
And we'll hear more from Maxine a little bit later on RNIB Connect Radio. Earlier, I was speaking with Maxine Turkington. I was finding out a little bit about her life, about her sight loss diagnosis, and why she hasn't let that get in the way of, well, pretty much anything to do with her life. Maxine, I want to take you back just a little bit to when you were in the States and you were given the diagnosis of sight loss. Now, many people, when they get that diagnosis, it can put them in a bit of a dark place. How did you deal with it?
I'm trying to remember. I think I just automatically worked around it. I thought, if I can't do this as I did it before, how can I do it now? When it came to driving, I found people who could give me a lift to work. And then I met my lovely husband, who was transferred to Cleveland. You know, we got together very shortly afterwards because we were each the love of each other's lives. Not my first husband, but as far as I'm concerned, my only one. And so, do you know, looking back, I don't know. I think I just thought, well, I can't do this. Well, it's difficult to do this now, so how do I overcome it? And I thought it out, and I found a solution. It seemed to come easily, really. It was just a matter of common sense and not panicking.
it says a lot about you as a person, Maxine, that having that diagnosis, you just seem to immediately think, it's not going to get in the way, I'll find ways around it.
And I kept doing it. And I do it now, and I have really a more active life than most of my sighted friends.
I mean, just on that point, Maxine, you know, you came back to the UK, and you now live in Cambridge. You got involved with a local charity. You're involved with RNIB. You created a cookbook for visually impaired people. You created a travel club. It seems as if you can't stop.
Oh, no. Well, you don't even know the best of it. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention this, but I was put in touch with a chap in Peterborough who is blind, and he had created a series of apps called Georgie Phone, which, when put into a smartphone, allowed a blind person to find their way to wherever they wanted to go, get on the bus, it'll tell them where to get off, and so on and so forth. And he wanted me to help him to introduce it to Cambridge. Well, my first thought was Addenbrooke's, our infamous hospital, but it is huge, and it's impossible even for a sighted person to find their way to whichever clinic or surgery they're supposed to go to. So I rang with my usual luck. I was put through to the perfect person, who in fact is disabled, but not sight-wise. He uses a wheelchair, and he's worked for them for 19 years and still can't find his way around. Well, the upshot was I set up a meeting where the Georgie phone was demonstrated by means, if you go into a large building, you have to have beacons to pick up the signal. I'll cut out the subsequent meetings and the excitement and the fact I called a company not knowing who they were to give us the £2,000 we needed, because they needed four and the hospital could only raise 2,000. And the upshot was that I put him in touch with Roger, and they provided it. And I didn't know when I gave him the name of the company, they couldn't believe it. It was Arm, one of the biggest companies in England. And these things happen to me, but you know, I get these ideas and assume that something good's going to happen. Well, the result now, the beacons are going in. They've already been tested and they work. So now anybody with a smartphone with Georgie phone installed, just the apps, they're only 99p each, I think, will be able not only to get to Addenbrooke's, find their way inside this enormous building and find whichever clinic they want to go to, take them right to the desk, and find the toilets, by the way.
Amazing.
And we're going to have a big publicity thing with all the papers and things.
Now, another thing which kind of interested me, Maxine, was you set up a travel club, and not just for visually impaired people, you know, and as you say, they're all sighted members that you have at the moment, and you travel around the UK, you travel abroad. Do you think that helps break down the barriers, you know, dispel some of these myths around sight loss, and people can enjoy sightseeing?
Oh, absolutely, because as long as you've got a little bit of sight, but even not. Now, this blind lady I take for walks, she goes abroad. She goes to Spain, where she has a friend living there and stays with her. She does everything. She goes to the art museum, goes on touch tours, goes to the theatre, lives on her own. I'm not the only person. So, you know, example is so important, that examples have shown how people can, over time, overcome sight loss or other disabilities. But you see, I don't see them as a disability. I see it as a slight nuisance and can be overcome, because as long as general health is there and the will to do things is there and the insight, you know, to find a method of doing these things, because there are charities that help, but some people are embarrassed. Now, I've been on two blindfolded walks. I wasn't blindfolded, but two different MPs for my section of Cambridge, and they were both terrified. And this was through RNIB and Campsite, because we do work closely together. And they were terrified. They just thought that to lose sight was the end of the world, you know. But also, I managed to get all the press involved and the local radio. That's another thing that I have fun doing. One of the things they took out of my short interview was the fact that nobody who has any type of disability, including being blind or partially sighted, had absolutely no reason to be embarrassed or shy about asking help. You know, when I go to a bus stop and I can't see the number of the bus, I say, excuse me, I can't see what number of bus this is. And they immediately tell me and everything's fine. You know, that's another solution to a problem.
Maxine, what would you say drives you?
I don't really know. I suppose it's just I've always been totally independent, even as a child. Because my mother wasn't a very maternal mother. And this was actually worked well for me, not for my sister, who's it just ruined my sister. But no, I used to go and walk to school when I was five, you know, it was about a mile. And when I was 10, 11 or so, during the war, shows you how old I am, you had clothes coupons, and I like nice clothes. So I used to design clothes, go to a dressmaker who would tell me how much material, and I used to get on the bus to London. Now, I lived in Kingsbury, miles away from London. It was northwest London. I'd get on the bus, and I'd go to all these posh places in Kensington and pick out my materials, buy it, then go to Lyons' big corner house where they had music, sit, order pastries and listen to the music. Bombs were going, air raid warnings on. It's up to parents to encourage children. If the children themselves have that sort of nature, they have to have that ability to do it. Otherwise, it could be a disaster, like my sister. But if parents realize that a child has the ability to be independent, they shouldn't be afraid to have that child walk to school or take on things that the parent might think are beyond their children. They should somehow test them and find out how far they can safely go one way or another.
Just finally, Maxine, you mentioned earlier you have a motto. And what would you say to people who perhaps are losing their sight or have just lost their sight?
What I would tell them is, quote my motto, when your life changes, change your life. Forget about what you can no longer do and think what you can do. Keep doing it and you'll surprise yourself by how much you can do without proper, you know, normal sight.
Maxine, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, and thank you for telling us your story here on RNIB Connect Radio.
I was delighted to be able to do it.